to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 73 and a half. We're burning the midnight. Well, you know how we do that in Las Vegas. John Morgan here. Cold coffee hanging on by a thread over there as we near 3 a.m. And another one that's just barely hanging in there. Britt, our friend from across the pond. Simon Head, gentlemen, I don't know about you. I know it's getting a little bit late here, but I am still buzzing either from the action that we saw tonight or something that was being smoked in the post-fight press conference. But I'm still feeling it right now.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. We didn't know how the fight week was going to go, but it went superbly as it turned out. But when the actual fight night came, sometimes fights don't live up to the hype. This one exceeded it for me. I thought it was outstanding. We got a fight that will go down in UFC history as one of the great rematches. I think if you look back at the great rematches in UFC history, I think you got to look at like Frankie Edgar and Gray Maynard.
Yeah.
But really, I can't think of too many more that will rank better than the one we saw, just as an all-out technical brawl for five-minute rounds. I thought it was outstanding in a huge arena with a passionate crowd. It delivered at almost every single level. It was fantastic.
In the same building, T-Mobile Arena, as UFC 200, which was just not that long ago, last month, you know. And, man, UFC 200, we came in with all that hype, all the expectations, all the fanfare. And at the end of the day, it felt kind of flat. This week, we're talking about what a slow week it is, how it doesn't feel like a big fight, and then that fight card from start to finish was fantastic, and then capped off by, you said, Simon, just an instant classic of a main event. Cold coffee, I know you were watching from the back for most of the night, but give me an idea of what your take was walking out of that. Just to me, it seemed like just a fun night from like I said, start to finish.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of fights, yeah, it was a really, really good night. And in terms of getting secondhand weed smoke in the back press room, we got plenty of that back there as well.
You were saying it wasn't just during the press conference. There was
no,
weed.
it was like constant back there. I don't know. I think it might have been maybe some of the guys from Submission Radio. I don't know.
We should mention the Australians are over there in the background stealing your fantastic internet here. At Casa de Cold Coffee.
You know, but now that I haven't smelled the weed smell, I can't say that it's them. But, yeah, we were getting big, big whiffs of it in the press room. And even, you know, I remarked to you earlier, you know, even some of the fighters are coming back there to have their interviews. We're just like, what the fuck's going on in this place? You know, I think security came in and looked at one point. But who knows what's going on. T-Mobile's got their little thing. I think some of the staff or maybe some of the event goers were really enjoying the colors of Ireland and supporting the orange, white, and
especially
green.
The green.
Yeah. So, but it was good. No, it was good. Good night of fights, and you know, I wasn't there for the 200, so this was my first.
Oh, that's
event
right. I forgot
of,
about that.
Dealing with the T-Mobile Arena and the whole food courts or the food vouchers and all the other sort of stuff.
So it
was
issues. Different. There's still issues.
Yeah, there's definitely some things to be worked out. But from what I heard from a lot of the other people, they thought it went a little bit better tonight
definitely
than
smoother.
What it did. So maybe they're working some things out.
Passive-aggressive Morgan did make a small appearance at the beginning of the night when I had trouble parking my vehicle because parking there, you know, Vegas parking used to be free. Now you got to pay $20 to park down there on event night, which sucks.
Yeah.
And luckily, the UFC was kind enough to create us, you know, a media list for us. But I was told that my name wasn't on the list, and I know. You know, I don't react. What are you talking about? You just skated in and didn't even.
I know. Bitch, I'm been verified now. I'm like, shit's just working for me. I pulled up, was like, hey, where's press parking? They were like, oh, it's right there. In fact, nobody even came to my car. Nobody did anything. I just sort of scanned my ID and boom. And I went.
Apparently, I looked shady because this happened to me. All right, well, let's talk about the main event. Conor McGregor versus Nate Diaz ended up being an epic fight. Really, I mean, I think part of it was just the emotion that went along with it. I mean, there were ebbs and flows to this. I mean, I think we've seen better fights this year in terms of the action that unfolded, maybe some of the techniques that were used. But to me, fights that are truly great have ebbs and flows. You know, of course, there was so much building into this already. The battle that we had all week long was amazing. But when you get that back and forth in a fight where the pendulum is swinging in terms of momentum and you're like, oh my gosh, and it was so tense. I should say that my internet crashed, speaking of slight T-Mobile issues, my internet crashed literally right as the main event was starting,
yep.
Which sucked. Fortunately, my man Stand Up was willing to just take over the play-by-play, so the byproduct of that was that I literally just got to sit there and watch the fight, which I can't tell you the last time I just sat there and watched the fight. So that was fantastic. I personally had it 48-47 for Conor McGregor. What about you guys?
I had it 48-47 for Conor as well. I gave Conor rounds 1, 2, and 4.
Right.
I know there is a discussion over round 2 because the start of the round, we saw 2 knockdowns within the first minute. But at the end of the round, it was Diaz who was pouring it on. If there'd been another minute and a half, who knows? You know, there could potentially have been a finish further down there, but it's a debating point, and there are people who scored the fight, and you know, we've referred to our Australian friends over there, spoke to those earlier. They both scored the fight 48-47 for Diaz.
Well, you know, you can't really trust their opinion on
well
fights,
it's down so under that's... all the scores are upside down, it's all, you know. that's how it works down there. But no, in all seriousness, it was a close fight. There were clear rounds for each man, but that second round, I think, was the one that ultimately decided who won the fight.
Right.
For me it was a clear round for McGregor, because he won the vast majority of the round. He dropped him twice early. He dominated the majority of the round. And it was in about the last minute of that round that Diaz really found his niche and just went for it and poured it on. And then went on and had a huge round in the third. But as you say, it was a real, you know, a real roller coaster of a fight. Ebbs and flows, as you say. But yeah, I had that fight for Conor. And sometimes you watch fights and you get to the end and you just look at each other and go, do you know what? I have no idea. We got to the end of that fight. I was pretty sure it was 48-47. I wasn't really unsure about any of the rounds. I thought it was a relatively easy fight to score as someone who doesn't professionally score fights.
It's funny because you look at the stats on Fight Metric, actually looking on UFC.com, but provided by Fight Metric. Mm-hmm. Round 2, Nate Diaz actually landed 51 of 92 total strikes. 37 of those were significant. Conor landed just 36 of 73, 34 of which were significant. Mm-hmm. So looking at just the number of strikes landed, it was Nate Diaz. But I walked away feeling very clearly as well that was a Conor McGregor round as well. Cole Coffey,
nope.
you felt the
disagree
other way.
Disagree with both you motherfuckers. Disagree both you motherfuckers. I gave Nate Diaz round number 2. I thought that he wildly did get the knockdowns. It was just like whatever. It was like one step almost. It could have been a fucking slip for all I care, because he didn't follow up with it. He didn't do anything. It was just like it was like a lucky fucking shot or whatever. And I overall, like you said, at the end of the round, thought that Nate did more, and the stats go to prove it. He out-hit him. He outstruck him. He outdid everything. I think maybe you guys got caught up in the whole thing of being there with the Irish crowd. That maybe
this is sort of a scandalous comment.
You know, I mean, I'm just saying, you know, a lot of us in the back that while we could hear the commentary, but also
maybe
had
you got
the,
caught up in Joe Rogan's
commentary. But actually, he was kind of saying a lot of good shit about Conor as well. But I think also we had the benefit of, you know, 4 or 5 different camera angles that they kept throwing. Mm-hmm. And while you do get to
and
see,
and the obviously
I think,
biased producer that was dialing up those angles.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was like, oh, yeah, let's go to this angle because I think that Nate's going to look better on this. I just thought he did better. I gave it 3-2. I thought Diaz had did enough to take it. I thought Conor, you know, right from the second round started looking tired, started looking like he was breathing heavy. And while he was doing stuff, I just overall didn't think he did enough to win that fight. But
well, let's talk about, you mentioned the fact that he didn't follow up to the ground. I think that was smart, right? I mean,
a kick, do something. He didn't want to go anywhere near. It was like he almost didn't believe, like, whoa, I actually knocked him down with that. You know,
yeah,
what
but
other
if
fight?
If he goes on the ground, he's going to get submitted like he did
yeah,
last time.
Run over at him, kick him in his legs, do something. You know, he tried that one time when he got frustrated and almost kicked him in his head when he was a downed opponent.
Yeah, he got very lucky.
That was because he wafted it just past his nose, and it was.
So, but
John,
yeah.
You turned to me and said, if that had connected, we'd have had a problem.
No doubt. Yeah, yeah, definitely an illegal kick. Well, let's talk about, Simon, what you thought. Because I thought initially the strategy was right. It's exactly what I said from the beginning. You know, I thought that Conor was going to be able to make the adjustments. And I said from the beginning, I didn't think he was going to be able to finish Nate Diaz. If he did, it would be very late. And I thought it would more be for, like, cuts or just overwhelming damage, which we did see a lot of damage. The Diaz brothers both just mark up a lot. It happens. Or they have soft skin,
And lots of scar tissue and all that sort of stuff that opens up. Yeah, I mean, even my brother was like, text me. He's like, well, that Diaz, he's a bleeder.
Yeah, it's superficial stuff. You know? I mean, it's just getting sliced up. But I thought that might be an issue, or I thought that Conor would get a decision. So I thought coming out in the first round, the what he did, you know, fighting patiently, sticking and moving, not falling to the ground when he had the knockdowns, I thought that was smart. But it did seem like to me, as round two wore on, and as he started to feel confidence, I think he was probably surprised that he knocked Diaz down. I think he thought, oh my gosh, I do have magic in my hands. And I felt like he started headhunting a little bit in the second round, and I thought, this is changing everything.
You could say he was being less efficient with his energy, to quote the man himself from the first fight. First round, I thought he mixed it up perfectly. He was using those leg kicks, and I think we thought going into the fight that he'd use those leg kicks. The way Nate Diaz fights, he's very heavy on his front leg. Puts all his weight over it. He leans and he sort of sways backwards and forwards. And it's something that Conor mentioned in the press conference, that he's able to control his own range almost without moving his feet, just from moving at the hips. And using that leg kick effectively made him a less mobile target.
Right.
And it also negated the ability of Diaz to really load up on his shots. And that then gave McGregor more confidence to stand in front of him and throw shots. As a stylistic thing, when the fight was contested at boxing range, McGregor was dominating the fight. When the fight was up close, are you okay over there, Cold Coffee? You all right?
Had some gas, it sounded
like.
Yeah,
I don't know. When the fight was up close and they were in the clinch and they were up against the cage, I thought Diaz had the edge. And it really was a case of up close phone booth stuff. That's where Diaz was really getting the advantage in that fight. And I think it was the third round he really started to lean on McGregor against the fence and would sort of work him over in the clinch. And you could see McGregor visibly tiring. And just whenever they separated and he sort of bounces away and sort of the shoulders are dropped and stuff. And you thought, Diaz has got a shot at this point. You know, he'd already had a good strong finish to the second. He dominated the third. And then it was into the fourth and fifth. And it was a case of who can really pick that momentum up. As it turned out, Conor then came back and had a really strong fourth.
I think you have to give a lot of credit to Conor McGregor. Let's set aside the second round. Round three, Nate Diaz dominates. Looking at the statistics again, 79 total strikes to 37 landed for Conor McGregor. And as you said, Simon, in the clinch is where he was really doing the damage. And just you could see the energy starting to sap out of Conor McGregor. And the momentum was clearly shifting in the other direction. You know, when Conor went back to the stool, it was wild because we haven't had Conor McGregor on our side of the cage in a long time. He was in the blue corner instead of the red corner, the first one out. And we haven't had him there in a long time, so we got to see a lot of what was going on up close. And visibly exhausted, you know, John Kavanaugh, who had been so open and honest about how much he felt his reputation was on the line, you had to start thinking, you know, man, what's he feeling right now as the tide is shifting, so to speak. And I think you have to give Conor McGregor credit for two things. Number one, vastly improved takedown defense. While he was in some bad spots against the cage, there were a couple times, and Simon, you and I were sitting right next to each other on press row, where it got close, but then there were a few times where he locked the hands behind him, and he had what looked like a sure takedown and couldn't finish it, and you got to give Conor McGregor a lot of credit for that. And then just the heart that he showed in the fourth round, because that, to me, is where he definitely won the fight. In trouble, getting tired, where, you know, things were not going his way, and dug deep and found a way to do it. Cold Coffee, I know you didn't think Conor McGregor won the fight, but I got to think you were at least impressed with the fact that he did dig deep and turn the tide a little bit.
Yeah, he did all right.
Wow.
I gave Conor rounds one and four, and you know, now that I actually see the stats kind of agree with what I was thinking. Yeah, he turned the tide, but whatever. I mean, this is a dude that says he was going to go in there and dominate him. I don't know. I'm not sad about it. I'm not whatever about it, but it, you know.
Hate.
I'm not. It'd be one thing if I was the only person that thought this, you know, and by clearly, you know, when I look at a lot of people that I respect online, you know, and seeing that they thought the same thing, them
such
watching
as, not us then.
Such as at Diaz Fan 01.
Yeah.
And.
I don't know. Maybe you guys are just drinking too much of the Conor juice over there or something. Maybe looking out there, it looked differently than it did everywhere else. But
no, it was, you know, I guess the thing is, and we should say, when we sit down to record this podcast, first of all, we've just finished working you know, a 14-hour shift. We haven't had a chance to go back and watch the fight again. I'll definitely watch again. I will have no problem watching that fight again. Definitely will watch the second round in particular. But when the fight was over, I felt good about it. I felt Conor McGregor had done enough to take the win. Okay, let's say this. Conor McGregor, what do you want to see him do next? Because he's saying that he doesn't want to do it at 170 pounds again. He wants to do it at 155 if they do the trilogy. And I will say this. I think if nothing else, I respect the hell out of Conor McGregor for saying, I want to go back and do this on the same terms where I lost it, right?
Yeah.
But it does kind of remind you how mad everyone was in retrospect of saying that he was going to potentially face Robbie Lawler. I mean, can we put it to bed that he does not ever need to go to 170 pounds again?
There's one fight he could do it with. That's George St. Pierre.
Oh, I think...
But GSP has said that he could potentially make 155 himself. So that, I think, is an achievable
GSP's
money fight.
He's not huge, but...
Yeah, that's the only fight that I think we should even entertain the thought of him fighting at 170 again. I think his optimal weight, based on the weight classes we've got available, is 155. He's clearly bone dry at 145. And I remember after the Aldo fight, Kavanaugh basically said he's never fighting at 145 again. So far, he's been true. He's been proved to be true because he hasn't. What I'd like to see him, rather than him be stripped of the belt, I'd like to see him actually relinquish the belt and take a title fight with Eddie Alvarez at 155, because I think that weight class is just so good. It's so stacked with talent. You could run it through 1 through 10, and you've got you've got top draw opponents, different styles. You've got Khabib, you've got Barboza. You mentioned Barboza versus McGregor. Just from a fight fan watching the contest point of view, it'd be fantastic to watch.
But got to give Nurmagomedov next, right?
Well, yes. But also what I'm saying, I mean, all I'm saying is if Conor McGregor can go and win the lightweight title, you have got, you know, you haven't got a situation where you've got two or three contenders and they're on some sort of rotation. You've got a murderer's row of people just waiting to get their hands on him. And one of them would be Nate Diaz. Mm. So what the ideal situation for me, I think, because the trilogy fight, I think, from a business point of view, makes complete sense. I have the view that things need to be a bit more based on meritocracy and sport. And I think championship fights, especially in the last few months, have been devalued significantly, and I think that needs to be addressed. It needs to be addressed quickly. So what I would like to see, get McGregor in a title fight, because I think he deserves one. He's beaten Nate Diaz, and I think he's in a position where, with his star power, the fact he's a champion at a lower weight, you can put him in there, and people will bitch and moan, but I think there's a legitimacy to him fighting for the lightweight title. If he wins that title, you could then do the Diaz rematch as a world title fight. Because what it does is it keeps the championship in play. What we've had so far is, and it was kind of amusing today, he was talking about not fighting Jose again. Because how would that make the division look?
Right.
Oh, no, sorry. He didn't want to fight Jose again, but he said about Jose getting the belt.
Right.
He said, how would the division, you know, what does that say for the division when the champion is a guy who I beat in 13 seconds? But he's not defending the belt himself.
I thought it was crazy because the young Mike Bond did bring up in the... quote-unquote press conference that we had, that, you know, Dana White had gone on the post-fight show and said, Conor needs to either, and he had told me the same thing earlier in this week, you know, Conor needs to either defend his title next or he needs to, you know, give the title up, which would clear the way for Jose Aldo versus Max Holloway, you would think, for the featherweight title, which I think would be fantastic, great fight. And Conor actually said, they won't do that. They won't take it away from me. And I thought... That was a bit wild, and then you know, right as he left the stage, Conor McGregor said that, you know, shit's about to hit the fan, basically. So
yeah,
you know, certainly I think throwing out there that things are gonna get crazy. Cole Coffey, what would you like to see next for Conor McGregor? Would you like to see him try that horrible cut down to 145 again, so at least he goes down and defends his belt, or did you say give it up and go to 155?
Well, if it sounds like he does want to give it up because he's stuck on the idea of his head of being a two-belt winner.
Right.
So I think he wants to force the UFC's hand. But no, I'll stick with my gun. I want him to fucking defend his belt.
Yeah.
Defend his belt or be done with it. The fact that you want to keep saying you're the featherweight champion, but you don't want to fucking defend it, and then you're like harping on the division, trying to make it sound shittier so that they'll let you just not defend the belt, but always hold the belt. I mean, you know, eventually it's going to be like 2 years and he hasn't defended his belt. You know, at some point enough's enough. So yes, I want him to either make the cut or give it up and then move divisions. If that means, hey, you relinquish the belt, we'll give you a shot at the title, which I don't think he deserves just to be able to go into another division. I never thought that was a good thing in the first place, but they did it for money reasons. But now the dude's making whatever, $3-some million, like,
3 million,
you know,
guaranteed.
Whatever. I mean, they're just cowtown, whatever the fucking phrase is. I'm so tired. And,
grumpy Kenny is in the
grumpy
room.
But it's back to the same thing. You know, I want him to fucking defend that title and beat up Jose again, beat it in 13 seconds, then walk away and then say the division's done. But at least do it once. I mean, you've had the belt for this long and you're having your fun, you're going to other things. But, you know, why not give it up if you have no intention to go back into it?
It's amazing that you're able to collect so much quality Conor McGregor audio for us for the show. Because it seems like you guys have such a tense relationship, but yet over no. and over, you're always able to pick up,
you know,
the money audio that
well,
we need.
He understands. He understands. I'm just talking it true. There's three tangs I want, and none of them means defending the belt in 145. Three tangs.
All right,
money, well, watches, and more belts.
Well, it is very obvious that we need some more frosty beverages here right now because Angry Kenny is getting angry by the moment. So
I'm not even angry. This is Sleepy Kenny.
Well, while we distribute those frosty beverages in hopes of changing Cold Coffee's mood over here, listen to the man himself, Conor McGregor, talk about
treatings
of how things went, how he wants them to be, and
What's to come?
There you go. Treatings.
Congratulations on your victory.
Thank you so much.
Just get the details first. See, we saw you limping. We see you come in on crutches. Do you know the extent of your injury?
My shin. I kicked his knee about 40 times, and it's haunting me. That's it. Just my shin. Everything else is good.
There was speculation that maybe there was a broken foot. Is that a concern?
No, my ankle was actually a bit banged up coming into the fight. We were practicing leg kicks in camp. So I was a little bit swollen coming in, but it's the shin. I kicked his knee clean. I think it was in the fourth round, and then I just kept kicking. So I'm feeling it now, but other than that, I am perfect.
An incredible fight between you guys tonight. This was such a personal mission for you. Can you talk about how you're feeling right now? Compare this. I mean, you're a world champion, but this meant so much to you. Is this a better feeling than that?
You know, this was a hell of a important fight for me. Everyone from the media to the fighters wrote me off this one. So they tried to say if I lose this one, I'm done. They tried to discredit the fact that I'm going up in weight. He was 25 to 30 pounds heavier than me. I don't care what anyone says. He was a big boy in there. He was easily 190 pounds. I was 167 leaving for the fight, and I was saying to myself, I need to eat, try and get up at least over 170, but I've no doubt he was about 190 in there. It was a hell of a fight. I feel I have more skills, but boy is he one tough motherfucker. He keeps on walking forward. He took every shot. I dropped him multiple times. He just keeps coming. His face was bust open and he's still coming forward. But I learned from the last contest. I stayed calm. I bounced the shots off my shoulders. I stayed tight in the pocket. I knew I was going to have that moment where he was going to be in my face and dig his forehead under my chin and start unloading. So I caught shots and deflected shots and then hit him to the body a couple of times, and it turned the momentum again in my favor. But it was a hell of a fight. He's a hell of a competitor. The whole lot of it brought out the best in me. It forced me to look at myself truly. I'm just grateful. I'm grateful for my coach John Kavanagh for everything he's done. I'm grateful for the team I had here, all my sparring partners that came out: Dylan, Connor, John Michael, Peter Queeley, Artem, Eric, Roddy, my striking coach. My cardiovascular training was monitored by Dr. Julian Dalby, who was amazing. Colin Bourne also was on board. I just had a rock solid team of people. Ido Portal as well was out again. It was great to have him back. I'm just very, very happy with everything. It was a hell of a camp, hell of a preparation. And we got it done tonight. It was not easy. It was a war. I'm happy it went that way. I got to show my heart in there. I took it to him, and I stayed in it and got the win, so I'm very happy with it.
Despite all the tension between you two, at the end of the fight, he reached down and gave you his hand to pick you up. Did that surprise you, and what did you think about that moment?
No, he's a class competitor. It's intense in the build-up, and everything is real. If we saw each other in the build-up, if my team saw their team, something's going down, and that's just the way it is. But respect is earned through battle for me and for them. So this battle was won. We'll regroup, we'll go our separate ways, see what happens, and we'll gather up for another battle. And then it'll be right back where we started.
Last thing I have for you, Connor. At the end, you said that we can do the trilogy fight at 155 pounds, your terms. Does this mean 170 is done for you for good? Has this been a lesson for you?
I want to get my abs back. I don't have abs at this weight. You know what I mean? I've been trying to get abs, and I'm like, fuck, I can't get abs, even though I'm eating good. Sometimes I feel I'm a bit of a fat belly. Look, I'm going to go back down weight. I'm the 145-pound champion. The 155-pound is there. When I fight Nate again, it will be 155 pounds. It will be on my terms this time. I came up. I didn't make any excuses or any stipulations to try and get this win back. I had it exactly the way it was previous. I said 170. He got even bigger from the first fight. He was way bigger than the last time. So he, over that 5 months or whatever it was since the last fight, he grew. So I knew how I was up against it. And I was thinking in my head, maybe this could be a mistake. But I said, fuck it. I train hard, be smart, learn from your mistakes, and go in confident. And that's what I done, and that's what we did. And I'm happy with it. But I believe if we do it again, it will be 155. Maybe for the belt. Who knows what's next.
Hey, Connor, congratulations. First of all, I wonder, you knocked him down three times in the first two rounds. Any of those, did you feel he was bad enough to go after him and try to finish him on the ground? I know you caught him to stand up.
Yeah, I cracked him. I dropped him three times, I think I dropped him, yeah. I could have went in there and pressed, but I was patient. I learned that lesson. You know, he does this thing where he uses his range where he pulls. And then as the fight progresses, he steps in instead of... So when I anticipate that he's going to be far, he steps in close. That was one thing that flustered me in the first contest. Because I was anticipating him to be far, and then he was here. So I anticipated that a bit better, and I was lighter with my shots and slapping him a bit. But I just had to be patient, not fall into my shots, not rush. I anticipated him to be there for the full five rounds, and he was. So... The game plan worked like my coach John Kavanagh's book, which is in stores now, Win or Learn. We learned this time, and that's it. I'm very grateful for it. I'm very happy with how it went.
What was the impact of the kicks early? You kicked a lot early in the fight, and what do you think that set up for you?
I tell you what, fuck leg kicks. My leg is in bits after them. I don't really throw leg kicks. I mean, I've thrown maybe three in my whole career. I've thrown about three, usually inside. If I'm fighting orthodox people and people in the featherweight division, about 5'8", 5'7", even, and orthodox, it's a little bit more risky. But this time, you have to hit the legs on him. So we practice leg kicks. And I tell you what, he's got pretty good at checking them. He's not what he was. He's able to handle the leg kicks now. He's a lot more seasoned with them. So, but I just kept kicking. I'm sure it's set up. Some of the shots that I landed, it took the mind. I didn't just headhunt. I hit the leg. I hit the body. I didn't overload on my shots. And I had some clean work in there tonight. I look forward to watching it back. When he stepped in a few times, I threw some elbows as well. I tell you what, man, his face was open up, and he's still just coming. He's still just coming at me. You've got to respect that. You've got to respect Nate and the style of fighting that he brings. How can you not?
And two other things. You lost once other in your career, and obviously this loss in UFC 196 hurt you a lot more. Why was it that this one had so much meaning? Was it just the significance of the fight?
I don't know. Just the way it all went down, you know what I mean? I'm sitting back and looking at everyone. You know, I don't care what anyone says. I helped bring this game to another level. They can deny that all they want, but I did. Like, look at Nate's pores tonight. Look at Nate's pores after the fourth fight. Look at everyone's game has gone up, money-wise. And I helped do that. So after that fight when I lost, and I'm looking at all these people, and they're all celebrating my demise and saying I'm done and this, and it certainly lit a fire under my belly. Every single person doubted me. Every single fighter doubted me. Doubt me now.
And then lastly, I just wondered, are you willing to fight Aldo at 145?
I mean, how long was I going back and forth with Jose? That must have been a 2-year build-up. He pulled out last minute. I continued to fight someone else. Then we rescheduled a 2-year round-the-world deal with that boy. And then he stepped in and I beat him in 13 seconds. It's hard for me to get excited about that, especially after his last performance. It was a decision. He didn't go out and get it. You know, he didn't go out and get it like I wanted him to get it. So I don't know. Look, we'll see. I'm the 145-pound champion. The interim 145-pound champion is a man that I KO'd in 13 seconds. I've got to figure out what's next. But right now, I don't know what's next. There's many, many things in the pipeline. So sit tight.
Connor, of course, when they were reading the scorecards, the one judge scored it as a draw. What was going through your mind as that was coming out? Were you sure that you had the fight won, or was there some concern?
I felt I won the fight. I felt 3-2 was a fair result. I mean, that first round, in my opinion, was a 10-8. I dropped them, and it was a handy round, that first one. So I would have given that first round a 10-8. But look, whatever they see. I won that fight, and I'm happy with it. My respect to the opponent. He's a hell of a competitor.
Okay, and Dana said on ESPN tonight that if you don't go back to 145 and fight Aldo, you have to be stripped of the belt. Is that something, you know, how soon are you going to make a decision of doing that?
I don't think they're going to do that. I mean, how can they do that? If they want to do that, if they want to give my belt to the guy I KO'd in 13 seconds and bury that division in the prelims or the fight pass stuff, because that's what they're going to do. We'll see. How can they do that? What would that do to the division if the guy I KO'd in 13 seconds is the unified champion? So we've got a lot to talk about, but I'm in a beautiful, beautiful position right now. And that was built through hard work, and I'm going to capitalize on that. You know, again, we'll see. There's a lot of stuff in the pipeline. Shit's about to hit the fan, I feel. So we'll see.
So Conor McGregor talking about a big emotional win for him, making it clear, I think, that he's not going back to 170 pounds. Should clarify, I guess, we didn't have a post-fight press conference tonight. We did find out earlier in the day that it just had been canceled, that it wasn't going to be done. The tent outside T-Mobile Arena was still set up. The stage was there. Everything was conducted more or less like a post-fight press conference, but only one fighter came up at a time. I asked the UFC rep earlier in the day, as soon as it came out, what happened. I was told it was for logistical and security reasons. I'm assuming that basically just boils down to the pre-fight press conference incident. And I had heard that MGM staff was not very happy with how things had gone down. Let's not forget, you know, when Daniel Cormier and Jon Jones had their issue, that was also inside the MGM. I'm sure they didn't want another incident like that. And they kind of put their foot down. Of course, they are part owners in the T-Mobile Arena as well, MGM Properties and AIG? AEG?
Could be AIG.
What is it?
AEG.
AEG. What's AIG? I don't
know. AIG?
It's another company.
Weren't they the shirt sponsors for Manchester
United? Why I thought AEG. Okay, AEG. Thank you, sir. Leave it up to the Brit to tell us about some American companies. All right, so that was why you heard us only speaking to one person at a time. Now, let's talk about Nate Diaz. Nate Diaz, perhaps, allegedly, maybe was vaping some marijuana at the press conference. Now, he says he was not vaping marijuana, and who am I to doubt Nate Diaz from saying that he's not vaping marijuana? But I can tell you that from a few feet in front of him in the front row, it smelled a lot like marijuana. At least what I've been told marijuana smells like. I don't actually, of course, ever.
You just read about it in the book.
I've read about it, and the way that it was so eloquently described to me, that is what I imagined in my head at the time.
Yeah, just say no, kids. Just say no.
Just say no.
Yeah. And the other thing about it was he was giggling like a schoolgirl by the end of the interview. That was the other thing. It's like he turned up and it started out as your typical Nate Diaz.
Which I've heard media. Can also be an effect.
Yeah. So
I've read about it.
Yeah, you know, it has been documented. And he started it out and, you know, he became way more talkative than I would have expected him to be, given the fact he'd lost the fight.
Yeah.
And by the end of it, he was chucking jokes around, having a bit of a joke at Ariel Helwani's expense at one point. Let's just say he grew more relaxed around in his surroundings. Is that the best way to describe it? Because who are we to say what was going on physiologically with Nate Diaz? He just had five hard rounds.
Right.
He may have had a huge adrenaline dump, and he might just have been, you know, his levels may have just been coming back to normal, and he was feeling a little bit better about life. He may also have just realized that I've earned $2.5 million for this fight.
Yeah.
Which
or more.
Well, that's just disclosed, isn't it? So, you know, anything on top of that. And they got a fight in the night.
That's right.
So there's another 50 G's on top of that. So maybe he's just realised, you know, life ain't that bad. Life ain't that bad. Maybe it was that, John.
Maybe it was. And here's one of the only reasons I bring it up. First, because the young Mike Bond stated on Twitter that he was smoking weed and then just got attacked. From what I understand, he said it was the worst social media response he'd ever received. That everybody was just slamming him, saying it was not weed, it's not weed. You know, you're an asshole. But the second reason I bring it up is that technically, you're still in competition for 6 hours after the contest.
But he already tested, I imagine.
Well, I would imagine so too. But theoretically, USADA. An inspector could show up at his after party and say, hey, we need a random, you know,
test after we just took a test.
It would be a dick move. There's no doubt about it. It would be a dick move. But, I mean, they don't test for weed out of competition. They do test for weed in competition. They theoretically do it. That's a little bit scary. And let us just say that I know it's tough to believe, but sometimes some, you know, authoritative figures have had issues with the Diaz brothers over the years.
I had this exact conversation with Adam Hill in the press room afterwards, because Adam was adamant that he said he was high. He was absolutely sure about
allegedly.
It. Allegedly. Well, it's one man's assessment of what he could see.
Right.
He's not here to defend his own comments, but you know, we talked about the whole testing thing, and he would have taken his test already. We would assume.
Yeah, because right? I don't think they would let him leave to go to the press conference if they hadn't tested him yet.
Here's a question for you then. If you're a USADA official and you are aware, as you would be as a USADA official, where the boundaries are, at what point you become out of competition.
Right.
If at the point that Nate Diaz is sitting up there doing the post-fight, he's still in competition, and to my understanding, technically he would still be in competition. If a USADA official happens to turn on a live stream or sees a Facebook live post from a member of the media or just happens to walk past the marquee and sees Nate Diaz there and overhears him saying, this is the stuff, because he was asked what was in it, and I can't even remember what it was that he said it was. And the USADA official either knows or thinks that there's a banned substance in there. Surely he's duty-bound to bring him in for another test, isn't he?
I would think so, and that's why it kind of made me a little bit nervous that he was being quite as comfortable as he was. Now, again,
yeah,
he says it wasn't weed.
Let me spit some knowledge from the internet. to everybody.
From the internet.
All right. He said he was smoking CBD vape oil. CBD oil. All right. CBD oil is a concentrated form of cannabidiol.
It's easy for you to say.
In a liquid form, which is heated and inhaled. It's made from the stalks and seeds of all natural hemp plants or marijuana and contains active CBD deponents without the psychotropic effects of tetrahydrocannabinol, which is THC, which is the effect of weed that gets you all fucked up. So, and if you go further...
The terminology they use on the
yes.
site.
Yes. Okay. Before, and you go further down when you leave the Vex, it is not addictive, and you cannot get high from vaping CBD oil. There are no munchies, no paranoia, no cottonmouth, no red eyes. CBD vape oil benefits is one of the preferred methods to ease side effects of diseases. Illnesses and ailments include leukemia, all types of cancer, stress, anxiety, joint pain, seizures, inflammation, sleep apnea, high blood pressure, and the list goes on.
That sounds pretty legit.
So, yes. So, in that sense, when you read it is, I can see where some people said, no, it is not weed that you're smoking, especially if it's made from the stalks and the seeds. Well, but the stalks and the seeds, when you actually look at, when you look at weed, when you're actually growing it, everybody takes the bud, the plant part, and smokes it. Nobody smokes the stalk. Nobody smokes the seeds, even though the seeds do have a lot of benefits dietarily wise. A lot of good amino acids and things of that sort, so you can actually eat. So eating hemp stuff is good. But what I was saying is, as he said, it was used to help heal some things and do some other little things, and it was a medicinal sort of thing. But according to this thing here, he was not up there getting high. He was partaking in something that does not have the active THC component.
Well, listen, I don't give a shit, dude. If he wants to. Like puff on a bong in between rounds, dude. I don't care. You know what I'm saying? I don't think it should be tested for anyway. I don't buy into that. You know, it can be a performance enhancer because you can take more damage or whatever. Like anybody you talk to will say, if my opponent wants to be high, dude, let him be high. I'm down with that. That, you know, that's impairing them. But it just did concern me a little bit because I thought, you know, blatant disregard. And it was wild too because, you know, this wasn't a press conference. It was a thing. Can you imagine if like. I mean, would he have tried that if it was like a straight-up press conference and like Dana's right there? That would have been pretty awesome. I got to say, that would have been pretty awesome. All right, Nate said, I'm not fighting again until I get my round three with Conor McGregor. Sounds like Nate made probably more money than he's ever made in his entire career combined tonight. You support that? I mean, if he sits out for a year, because it's kind of the point where Nick's at, right? Like, Nick doesn't give a shit about fighting for titles or contention or building a run or anything like that. Kokavi, if he wants to sit out for a year or maybe it's 18 months and he wants to wait until...
He's got plenty of money, yeah. Why not?
You down for that?
Yeah. I mean, I love seeing the guy fight. So, I mean, it sucks that he wouldn't be fighting. But, I mean, he's got plenty of money now to actually sit. The thing is with him, I mean, these guys are so giving of themselves when it comes to their crew that... It'd be one thing if it was just him and his brother. I guarantee he's going to pay that $75,000 off that Nick owes
that.
To.
Right.
That's gone. That's taken care of right off the bat. I guarantee.
By
it.
The night bonus, 50 G's. It's
boom.
That's almost a bit right there.
You know. So
adding his Reebok money for 20 G's, that's 70.
You know, I think he's really want. He's went out there now. He said that he wants to just pick these fights. You know, it's follow the leader and do this other sort of stuff. So yeah, I don't think to him. You know, titles or any of that sort of stuff. As he said, I mean, even if they put the carrot out there of a title thing, I don't think it matters because if the right fight isn't there, and unfortunately, only against somebody like Conor is he going to get the kind of money that he now wants to fight. Unfortunately, that sort of thing isn't going to happen that often unless they change, you know, and something happens maybe when this union comes in and the different, you know, collective bargaining or something happens. So, yeah, I mean... He's got plenty of money. I mean, I think if we all made a couple million dollars and we had the option of kind of just relaxing and not stressing and doing whatever for a year, I think I can manage to do that.
Are you not independently wealthy?
No, but I'm just saying if I had it.
I just do this for the passion of the sport.
Yeah, yeah. Even if you were just totally wealthy, you're like, fuck it. Let's go work 18-hour days. Not see my kid's birthday.
I'd be sitting out smoking some CBD oil.
CBDing it up, man. I could use a little healing right now, you know? So I'm kind of bummed, man. I was in the back. I didn't smell anything back there, but I don't know.
Well, apparently CBD oil smells a lot like weed or what I read weed smells like.
Maybe it was somebody off to the side. Who knows?
All right. Well, let's hear from the man himself. Nate Diaz, he did come back. He was gracious enough in defeat. I think a lot of us in the media thought he probably wouldn't show up after a disappointing result. But he was gracious enough in defeat to stop by and give us a few minutes of his time and share about the wonders of CBD oil.
I wonder if I can just start by asking your reaction to the decision. You didn't seem like you agreed with it.
I didn't think for a second that I lost at the end of the fight. I thought I won the fight at least 3-2, except for judging by rounds. And I think that he did a lot of running away that in the old days, or in a real fight, I think you get pointed for it. In boxing, you would get pointed for it. So I think they should have took points from him from running. And I think if I wasn't bringing the action, it would have been less of a fight. So I didn't think that, for sure, I didn't think I lost for a second until it was over. I mean, until they said so.
In the first two rounds, he was having some success with his with the kicks and then striking with you. What was causing you trouble with that?
Like about a month out, I got some injuries. I hurt my knee and I wasn't able to do jiu-jitsu for like ever since a month ago. And then about 2 weeks in, I was just sparring from when I hurt my knee. I was just boxing, a lot of boxing, trying to recover my knee. And then I got hit by my training partner, Alan Sanchez. He's a pro boxer. He's ranked like number 10 or number 7 in the nation. I got hit in the rib, and it really tweaked me out of order. And I actually had to stop sparring about 2.5 weeks ago. So this was probably worse than the last fight. I was all I was pretty much doing for this fight was running and riding a bike and shadow boxing. But so I had some plans, and I had a lot of plans for this fight, but I had to like kind of backtrack on those plans, protecting some injuries.
In the third round, you heard him. One of the judges scored a 10-8 for you. How did you turn the tide of the fight when he knocked you down 3 times in the first two rounds and was doing fairly well? What turned it around for you in the third round?
I knew he was going to have a success earlier. I told myself again, like, don't turn it up till later in the rounds, because I was just like I suspected. I didn't thought he was going to slow down and I was going to speed up. So I was letting him get his little things off and try to make him do some stuff. And so I stepped on the gas in the third a little more than earlier.
Nate, what was the difference in Connor tonight from the first fight?
He was prepared to go the distance. He said he was going to come in and come forward and stomp me down or walk me down and put his same pressure and do the same things as usual. And I thought that was a little strategy to make me think that. And he was going to spread it out a little. And he did. He spread it out a little bit.
And he was trying to keep you at bay from trying to take him down and you know, do your jiu-jitsu too.
Yeah, he didn't want to go down to the floor. And, you know, I didn't plan on going for it, too. I feel like I was going for a takedown a little too much, more than I should have. And I wasn't necessarily going, like, drastically for it, but I feel like I should have done a little bit less of that and a little more punching and working than wrestling. I hate when people try to do that. But it felt like it was going to be easy, but at the last minute, he pulled it off and put his defense on. I was like, all right, you want to stay? I want to keep this ball rolling.
This was such a war. Obviously, there's probably going to be a trilogy, but, I mean, when does that take place? About a year from now? And when do you think you could fight again?
Whenever they're ready to dot it back down. But I'm not doing shit until we go for round 3. Won't be seeing me until then. And if they want to set it up as soon as possible, let's do it. But I don't think it's a very good business move for him to be taking any other fights. And he's a businessman, so let's see what happens.
Nate, both of you are obviously interested in doing this again, but Connor was clear that he wanted you to come down to 155 for a third time. What are your thoughts about doing that?
I've been a lightweight the whole time. I think I walked into the cage tonight at probably 177, 76, 75 probably. Fuck, maybe lighter. I believe that, hell yeah. That's why I wanted this fight at, so I could have a six-pack. You know you want to be in a picture with a six-pack.
So if he wants it at 155, you're down for that too? That's what you're saying, right?
Yeah, either or.
Let me ask you about his takedown defense, because you got a takedown on him at the near the end of the fight, but he was able to defend some other ones, and that's been kind of an open criticism about him, or maybe an unanswered question. From your grappling background, how did you gauge his takedown defense against what you were trying to accomplish?
I wasn't really pushing too hard for the takedown, you know. I was just in a position to not... I don't want my boy. I don't want Jake and Gilbert watching me like, why don't you dip this guy when he had the chance? But you know, so I was giving a little attempts, but I don't sit there and work on the takedown that hard, because I usually go with the path of least resistance. You know, I'm like, when we're here to ride, we're here to go on a run, or we're here to lift weights. You know, I'm here for throw some punches rather than try to get a wrestling match.
Just one more, if I could. In the third round, of course, that was the 10-8 round one judge gave you on the scorecards. That also seemed to be where Connor's energy level and the power in his punches really dipped. I mean, from your read inside the cage, was that your gauge of it as well, that the starch had gone out of his punches at that point?
No, I think I just got warmed up, too. And usually about that time, he died out the last time and I picked up. So I was like... I was on and off the gas a little bit more after that mark, I think. You're talking like the second round, right? About the
end of the second.
End of the second, third, middle yeah. second. On yeah, probably about right there, I started stepping on a little harder.
Nate, congratulations on a great fight. Obviously, you know, you always put on memorable fights, and people have been talking about the fact that you're finally getting paid, you're finally getting your due. Even though you lost tonight, how good does that make you feel to be getting what you believe you've deserved for such a long time?
Still not enough.
Well, I mean, if you were to do this again, I would believe you'd make even more then. Would you say you needed to make the same amount as Connor? I know this isn't just about the money, but...
It's always going to be more than that. Always more and more. It's never going to be enough. Look at my face. You know what I'm saying? And I'm okay. Like, you know what I'm saying? Some people's got this face and they're all in the back crying somewhere probably, you know? It's always going to be more. And until people start saying that and represent for that, I don't even know what you're doing this for. And if you don't think like that, you don't work hard enough. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, if I put it on the line, I could either have been here or I could have been... You know what I'm saying? A retired fighter coaching new fighters, you know? So I think getting in here fighting is a good cause for causing a scene and spitting out what I feel I deserve. And if you're not spitting what you feel you deserve, if you're okay with it, then you don't work hard enough. And that's where I'm at, and that's why they're where they're at, anybody.
And in terms of your injuries, obviously, you mentioned the ones that you had before the fight. We know that Connor's... shin is very bad right now. Other than, you know, what you just mentioned here with your face, are you feeling okay though? I mean, are you very badly hurt at all?
Hello, Sam. Yeah, I think I'm going to. He's going to the hospital, I think, and then I'm going to an after party. So, I'm going to after party at Light, come through. It's all good. And my brother's going to be there, too. They let him in there. That's cool. Yeah, that's where I'm going. Keep the money. Thanks for letting my brother in. he wants to go to the party, huh? This motherfucker's ready.
Nate. You said before the fight that...
Hey, I thought Ariel Helwani got fired. Who let you in here?
Surprise, surprise.
I'm just kidding.
They said before, you said before the fight that they better hope you don't win because a lot of change is coming. You didn't win officially. You thought you won. Is change still coming?
Oh, I won. Change is happening right now. Like I said, like, if you want to be successful in this business and if you want to do good in this business, you don't have to follow the leader. You know what I'm saying? And if you're going to say that somebody else is the leader, you got it wrong. They come and look at Connor. What did Connor do for this fight? He did exactly what I told his ass to do. He hopped on a bike, the little amateur style. He didn't have no clips. He didn't have no helmet. That's not how you ride, but he tried. And he hired all top 10 people to come in from wherever. I don't know where them gimpy-ass boxers he had came from. And then that jiu-jitsu coach he's got. I'm going to get that motherfucker, man. That guy is on my hit list. This is America, and he's over there representing with them. And then he wants to try to look up at a press conference like he's hard. That's the reason that fool dog got rushed at the press conference, too, is because they rolled in making it seem like we're the hardest shit in town. But I had too many people, riders with me already. I'm like, you guys are going to come in. So that's why otherwise we had a good press conference. But they walked in like they were the shit to steal the show. And I'm going to get off topic, but fuck them. But what I was saying was, he followed the leader, man. He hired these people, and that was a good job. You know what I'm saying? But who taught you how to do that? Your sensei here, man. It's like, follow the leader as far as the martial arts artist. Follow the leader as far as the businessman. Like, if you think that I'm tripping and just talking on my ass, then you're obviously not that bright. Because I've been supposed to have been fired already 20 times from this organization. And look where I'm at now. Still doing my thing on the main cards, doing my thing. And I just hope Ariel Helwani don't get kicked out again, man. You know.
Thank you. Just another question for you, Nate. Just to be clear, no single fight out there other than Connor next that you're interested in, you will wait as long as possible, you will not fight again?
It's not that I'm waiting, but I don't need to do nothing.
Okay. And what exactly are you, just for the record, smoking?
This is True. It's True, the True Company. It's a CBD. It helps with healing process and inflammation and stuff like that. So you want to get these for before, after the fight, training, and make your life a better place.
And then one last one.
CBD oil, if you don't know what that is.
A big part of this story has been which team is better, and unfortunately Chris lost to Artem earlier. What were your thoughts on how that fight played out?
I think he's it was his first fight in the UFC. It's a huge show. He went in there and fought a guy who's been in, won the Ultimate Fighter or second place in Ultimate Fighter and has 20, 30 fights, and he's 30 years old or some shit. So he grew up, this is the beginning of his career. And I see a lot of me and my brother and like people like that I saw train hard out of the guys. So I think this is just a start for him, and I think he's going to be more comfortable next time. And the night went how the night went, but Artem didn't do much. What did he do? He just didn't get his ass whooped. That's all he did. So, yeah, our team's better, and you know, I think he's gonna do great in the future.
Nate, after the fight, you helped Connor up from the ground. Did you actually speak to him at all? Was that, I know you and your brother both, you know, obviously you're pretty fierce in competition, but you're always, you know, respectful afterwards. So, like, what was going through your mind? Did you actually say anything to Connor at that point?
Yeah, he, the fight was over. We just fought 25 minutes. He tried, I tried to take each other out, and it didn't get done. And it's like, hey, man, until next time, it's all good. Or until we're set to go again, it's all good. And what do you want me to do? You keep kicking the guy while he's down. It's like, it's all good. Fight was over.
And obviously your brother wasn't able to be in your corner tonight. He had to go through a lot this week. I mean, what were your thoughts on everything that went down with Nick? You know, not having him in your corner, he wasn't allowed at the weigh-ins. I mean, what was going through your mind with all that? You know, obviously you wanted him there, but what was going through your mind with that?
He does good. He knew what his situation was, and he kind of stayed out of my hair and just like left me alone. And then I talked to him, and he's like, oh, I think he's getting. He just kind of told me he's going to get back in the corner once we get it all figured out. And then I had these guys here for backup. So it's kind of a mess, man. It was really – they should let him in. I don't know what to deal with that because I figure it's suspension's up. But, I didn't mess with me none, but it would have helped. It's always good to have Nick there, you know. Nick's the man.
Thanks, Nate. Thanks, everyone.
I just thought they wanted the fight to happen. It was all good. That wasn't necessary. When I was waiting for him to say go, so it was all good.
So Nate Diaz and Conor McGregor 2 lived up to all the hype and more. It was one of those rare fights that, you know, you get pumped about it going in and you end up getting even more than you expected. It was incredible. It was not the only highlight of the night, though. This was a night full of fantastic fights. Let's talk about the co-main event briefly, and we only need to talk about it briefly because the fight only took place briefly. Anthony Johnson, 13-second knockout over Glover Teixeira. I'm not going to lie. I actually got called out on Twitter and made fun of because I had one of those, what do you call them? Involuntary reactions where basically it was such an incredible knockout with the uppercut that Anthony Johnson threw that my hands kind of went up to the side of my head just like, oh my God, he's murdering this man right now. Simon, that was just vicious. Anthony's a scary dude.
Yeah, I think he's the scariest man in the UFC. I think it's between him and Derek Lewis for the, you know, the mantle of scariest man in the UFC. You're talking pure punch power. I don't think there's another guy in the UFC as scary. I think he's the man. I really do. And then the thing to bear in mind here, Glover Teixeira is no mug. You know, he was one. I think he was ranked number two and Johnson was ranked number one. Mm-hmm. Glover Teixeira has had 30 career fights. He'd only ever been stopped by a TKO once, and that was in his very first fight back in 2002.
That's insane.
Okay, and he's renowned for being incredibly hard to break down. He's made a career of it. And Johnson just went in there, and number one, he starched him with an uppercut. It was such a brutal uppercut. And it starched him. But the scariest thing about it was watching Glover Teixeira actually come back round afterwards.
He didn't know where he was.
He looked completely bewildered. He was trying to get up and as if he was going to carry on. And they're like, no, the fight's finished. And, you know, you could see just the look of complete confusion on the man's face. And this is a man who has never been knocked out like that. As I say, his only loss was his first fight. Sorry, his only stoppage loss was his first fight. And that was a TKO from punches and elbows. So that would have been cumulative strikes. Yeah. So this was just one hitter, quitter, no question. Bang, finished. Good night, Irene. Off you go. And yeah, I mean, terrifying power. And we both spoke about it on Press Row. I don't think there's a light heavyweight in the world now, and I include John Jones in this, that I would back to beat an Anthony Johnson in that kind of form.
It's amazing. Yeah, I was going to actually ask Cole Coffee about that because it looks like the rematch is going to be in with Daniel Cormier for the light heavyweight title. There's just really another other fight that makes sense. He wants to do it at UFC 205. Honestly, that might make some sense because UFC 205 in New York, the Madison Square Garden show, is kind of running out of options. You know, they wanted Ronda Rousey to be on there. That's not going to happen. They wanted John Jones to be on there. I don't think that's going to happen. I know that he's talking about having good news, but he still had a banned substance in his body, so I think he's going to have to serve at least some suspension. This might not be a bad option, but Kolkov, you think it goes any different the second time around? I mean, I picked Anthony Johnson going into that first fight with Daniel Cormier. People thought I was crazy. I felt like pretty happy about my pick when he came out and floored him in the first couple of seconds of the fight, and then Daniel Cormier came back to dominate for the rest of the entire fight. What do you think? Is it different this time? If you had to make your pick now, would you give Rumble a shot?
I definitely would give him a shot. I don't know if I would give him the nod as much as I want to and always do, because I think if Daniel makes the decision to try to keep it a stand-up match like Glover did, he might end up the same way. But I don't think Daniel is going to try to keep it as a stand-up match. I think he's going to do as much as he can just to work it in so he can get a takedown and do or whatever. But speaking of knockout, did they ever say anything? Was that Glover's tooth that went flying up into the air with that uppercut?
I didn't see that. If it was, I was
you
too
have to
busy.
Watch it on.
I was too busy shielding my eyes from the
you'll
crime
have to watch
scene.
In the replay. But yeah, when he takes a shot, something goes flying up, and it wasn't. I was like, is that spit? That would be a weird spitball to sort of fly up out of nowhere. And it wasn't a mouthpiece, but I know some people were talking about saying that I thought that was a tooth that came out, but who
you
knows?
You could actually visually see brain cells flying through the air.
It might have been his soul flying out of his body like in Harry Potter, and it comes back down and lands in. But no, I mean, yeah, sure. I mean, you see a performance like that, it's hard to not immediately just say nobody's ever going to beat this guy again. But we've seen this before from Anthony when he's had moments of just absolutely just pure dominance and who's going to stand in front of him. And then people go and Daniel did what he did. Like, yep. I felt like it was the same thing going into that last time that, God, Anthony's just going to fucking crush Daniel. And it was like, wow, he never even got a chance. And when he did hit him, it didn't do the same damage, you know. So, no, I think ultimately I would probably give Daniel the nod over Humble Johnson, as Ariel coined that phrase, or maybe said, because he was super, super polite. I mean, how can you not like that dude? And I mean, and I hate to even try to say that I don't think he'll win, because I think he's a fucking incredible, nice individual, and I'm very, very happy that he's healthier and he's doing his thing. I know when he was doing all the weight cuts before, I hated seeing him in such a bad way. But it's good to see him just thriving and literally destroying people. Does he have a chance to knock Daniel out? Sure does, because, I mean, I think, you know, he's probably in the top two guys of power, and I'd be hard-pressed to think of who. Maybe Mark Hunt, and when Mark Hunt has a perfectly laid out one, I think that his punch is probably maybe harder or whatever, but yeah, Anthony's a scary, scary dude, but my gut tells me that Daniel, he's a smart dude. He'll figure out a plan to make it so he could hold on for that belt.
I think that's the fight we see next. I do think John Jones is not going to get a 2-year suspension, but I do think he's going to get something. I mean, we can kind of talk about it. I mean, Michael Bisping basically broke it that it was Cialis. It was not Cialis exactly. It was, from what I've been told, a Cialis-like substance, of course. And I think some people took his statement a little bit too literally. All right, Donald Cerrone, Rick Story. I picked Cowboy Cerrone going into this fight just because it's hard to pick against Cowboy Cerrone. I mean, you look at the run he's on. But I did think Rick Story possessed a lot of things that give Cowboy problems. Rick Story is a very aggressive fighter. That gives Cowboy some problems sometimes. Rick Story works to the body a lot. That gives Cowboy some problems. But Donald Cerrone was on point tonight. And just the finishing combination that he used of punches and kicks and Cowboy at 170 pounds, I know he made the challenge for the 155-pound title after this fight, but to me, 170 is his sweet spot. That's where he should be.
Yeah. He looked great. Great. Go ahead. I know you're
incredible insight there.
I know Simon wants to talk.
How can I build on that?
You know, I know Simon wants to talk. I'll just cut it short so he can finish out the segment.
it was superb, and whenever you see someone throwing a combination like that, especially in MMA, people quite often, they don't always land their punches spot on. That combination, like the first combination that really sent Story sort of careering off towards the fence, you know, to get finished, you hit him with head, body, head, head kick.
Amazing.
And it was like pow, 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 like that. And everything landed flush. Everything landed with power. And it was superb. And, you know, we all know Rick Story is, you know, he's a blue chipper. He's solid.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't put him away with, with any ease whatsoever, unless you're Donald Cowboy Cerrone, evidently, because that was, I didn't see that coming. I honestly thought that that fight would go the distance. I thought Cerrone would probably outpoint him, but I didn't see him finishing Story. Certainly not like that. It was another superb performance from him, and I think he'd be mad to move back down to 155. I've got to be honest.
I agree. How about the newcomer, Platinum Mike Perry? Talked to the guy last week. We had him on the MMA Roadshow. I know, Simon, you got to talk to him a little bit this week as well. The guy is, I mean, talking to him, it's like talking to a character. Like you feel, I don't know, man. He's got this confidence, this swagger. He's got a little bit of an accent that's kind of funny to me. And I don't know, man. I enjoy talking to him. Like, he really – I don't want to say inspired me, but I got kind of excited about seeing him fight. But I was like, dude, Hyungyu Lim in your UFC debut, like, that is a monster of a man. And damn it, if Perry didn't just go out there and maul Hyungyu Lim.
It was quite incredible. I spoke to him on media day, and I'd got a little bit from you that he had a little bit of a character to him. So I thought, okay, I'll go over and grab him. I was doing a Facebook Live at the time. And I thought, okay, I've just interviewed Cerrone, and he was literally in the seat next to him. And he had no one talking to him. So I thought, right, okay, I'll go over and have a chat with him. He was superb. He was probably the most fun interview of the day. Mm-hmm. He was great fun. Very refreshing, honest. A man who was very, very, very pleased and proud to be in the position that he found himself in. But also absolutely hell-bent on getting a win, and he promised me that he would finish Hyungyu Lim. And you know when you talk to fighters and they tell you what they're going to do, and you have your own preconceived ideas of what's going to happen, and you have to just sort of nod politely.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, you will, buddy.
Well, no, you say, well, best of luck and all the rest of it, right? Yeah. And then off you go, and you walk away going, that's not going to happen, right? He delivered on what he said. He said, I'm 7-0, 7 KOs, and he's going to be number 8. I'm going to finish the guy. And I'm thinking, you do well to reach his chin for a start. Yes. I mean, he almost looked like a junior version of Hong Man Choi. Like, yeah. the size differential, it was crazy. And yeah, it was kind of weird because he knocked him down with huge shots. And both times, well, the first two times, Lim was able to recover.
Right.
So it's almost like the force of the punches knocked him down rather than it being what you would call like a concussive shot.
It's interesting. It's true.
Do you know what I mean? So because he was down, but he wasn't completely scrambled. It was a case of, crikey, I've just been knocked off my feet here. Mm-hmm. And he recovered very well and got back up. The third one, which was the one that ultimately finished the fight, I think that just genuinely physically hurt the man. And he rolled away. And I think the referee, I think it might have been John McCarthy, he saw that, and that's not intelligent defense at that point, and he jumped in and he stopped the fight. But it was remarkable, and I saw people talking about him on Twitter saying he was a bit of a heel character and all this sort of stuff, and people commented that I think Dan Hardy and Michael Bisping both tweeted within like seconds of each other saying, that tattoo on his stomach, does that say God's gift? And I can't verify it because I'll be honest I didn't look, but If they're both saying that's what it says, then there's a fair chance that is what it says. But so he's got a little bit of something about him, and in this business,
that's what you need.
That's what you need.
You want to watch him fight next time out.
Well, I said to you, I said we need to get that man on a European card. We'll have some fun with him.
No doubt.
I think that would actually be a really good idea. Get him on a European card. Put him against some European talent, and let him build his character, because the European media, they always want characters at these European events, because they're not pay-per-view level events. They don't always have the star power. So what you do want are prospects who are interesting, and he certainly fits that bill. I think, as I say, I'm looking forward to seeing what he does next. He might, this might be his only big moment. I don't know. He might go on and be something remarkable, but today that was hugely impressive, and I'm chuffed for the guy, because having spoken to him, he came across to me really well, and you walk away thinking, yeah, I'm kind of you know, I wouldn't hate seeing him do well, you know.
No doubt. The main card started out with Tim Means picking a win over Saba Humasi. Tim Means looked fantastic. You know, he's been through so much difficulty. You know, the suspension that he didn't really agree with. He did get it reduced, but still felt bad. They had to take it. But he looked fantastic. And I've actually got a chance to speak to Jeff Nowitzki about that whole process and how it worked out. So I'll have some more on that this week on MMA Junkie and just kind of how the whole thing unfolded and kind of what lessons we can take out of it. I feel like we're all still kind of learning about the USADA policy and how to implement it and you know, how to affect it. So I will have more on that. Cole Coffey, I did want to give some love to your fellow Ohio man, Cody Garbrandt.
O-H.
Guy just looked phenomenal. The hand speed that he brings to the table is just unbelievable. It's lightning fast, and of course the power as well. Finishing off Takei Mizugaki, who's a legit veteran. You know, maybe a gatekeeper is what you call him, but you know, that's not always a negative term. I mean, he's a guy that's been around. If you're going to be at the top of the sport, you got to be able to get by Mizugaki. And not only did he get by him, I mean, he just blasted through him.
Yeah, it's one thing. I mean, I think people look at what Dom did when Dom came back and just sort of mauled him, and everybody was like, oh my gosh, Cody just took that and just bested that easily. You're right. I mean, he's got super, super quick hands, and you know he's got the power, but when he's got that speed, you know, a lot of times, you know, when guys got a lot of speed, sometimes don't really have that power, and they kind of pepper, but he's got the power with that speed, which is a really, really dangerous combination. And he's got good wrestling. You know, I'm really, really excited for this kid. I hope he keeps doing good things, and I mean, I'm very, very excited. I love that he's not afraid to say what he wants and put shit out there, and he's perfectly wants to engage, especially somebody like Cruz that loves to talk shit as well. You know, you got two guys that want to do it. So again, I think it was the same thing with, you know, eventually what got me excited about Connor and Nate was the fact that both guys really got into it, were embracing it, and we're talking the game, and the next thing you know, I'm like, shit, I'm sold too. So now hearing these guys, you know, I want it to happen. I want it to happen big time.
Looks like Dominic wants it to happen too. I mean,
you know,
he was in the
anytime
building
you have a champ
and they're
asking
down
for something, you got to give it to him. You know,
I don't think there's a lot of other fights that make sense. I mean, I know Dillashaw picked up the win at UFC 200, and so Dillashaw thinks he's next. But I don't mean this as any slight, but I just don't think that was that performance where you go, dude, he needs the shot.
Yeah,
Garbrandt, that's the kind of performance where you go, I want to see that dude in a title fight. And yes, TJ Dillashaw is still an absolutely top-ranked bantamweight. There's no doubt about it. Yeah. You know, he's right there at the top. But, you know, I know, Simon, that you said you want to see title shots be a little bit more about a meritocracy and all that. And you're right, but this isn't necessarily like a guy that doesn't deserve it. He does. And you add in the fact that, damn it, he's exciting and he's got something about him and brings something new to the table. I know it'd be a big jump up for Garbrandt, but I think, honestly, at least as I sit here right now, I think I want to see Cruz and Garbrandt as the next title fight.
I tweeted it straight after the fight. I said, you know, the hand speed plus the punch power makes this kid complete dynamite. And I tweeted, give this lad a title shot. That's what I said. And Dominic Cruz put Takeo Mizugaki away in 61 seconds, and we were all blown away by that performance. Mm-hmm. And Cody Garbrandt aced him today. He aced him. 48 seconds. And honestly, I thought that's a tough ask to put him away quicker than Dom did. He did, and he looked outstanding doing it. And I think the TJ Dillashaw fight is one that we've seen quite recently. And I would do TJ Dillashaw versus Uriah Faber. But I'm a bit of a mischief maker.
Right?
So I would do that.
On the same card.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I would do that
on the same night.
That would be a lot of fun.
And then do Dom Cruz versus Cody Garbrandt. That would be. I think
that would be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Both those fights on the same card.
Yeah.
I love that.
And you'd end up with.
And if you have any, you know, if you have any injuries, you can shuffle things around a little bit. Around.
And you'd have that weird situation, a bit like we had in LA, where we had people trash talking other people's fights for them. It was kind of it was kind of weird. So you know, you can imagine Dom Cruz having a pop at Dillashaw and Faber while also having a pop at Cody Garbrandt. You know, he'll just be taking a scattergun approach and ripping into all of them. I think it would be great. But as you know, just speaking about Cody, He was the guy I walked away from Media Day the most impressed with.
Buttoned up.
Because you see him, and what you see is this guy, he's got this very stern look on his face, like he's got the tattoos and all the rest of it. He looks like someone who's ready to kick off at any point. Mm-hmm. And then you actually chat to the guy. He's the most down-to-earth, just lovely guy to talk to. I know he's got a very interesting backstory. I also know that he does a lot of charitable stuff. And he came across as a consummate professional during fight week. And from a corporate perspective, which is not an exciting perspective to talk about, but he's a model champion in waiting. But from a fan point of view, he's got lightning hands and he knocks people out. And that's what fans want to see. So it's, he's like the total package. And he's a good looking kid as well, which can't hurt him either. That'll get him magazine shoots and,
no question,
you know, cereal boxes and God knows what else. But I think, the sky's the limit for that lad. I really do.
All right. Well, listen, it's getting late in the night / early in the morning. My producer that still has to edit this thing is falling asleep over there. And so I should probably give him a break. I did want to say, Raquel Pennington, Artem Lobov, Courtney Casey all picked up wins on FS1. Colby Covington, Martin Vettori, both picked up preliminary wins on UFC Fight Pass. I did want to give a special shout out to Lorenz Larkin.
I was going to say, say something about that fight. Christ. I mean, what he did to Neil Magny. I mean, like, we're big fans of Magny. I know we've talked about him quite a few times. Anybody could do that to Magny, Jesus Christ, that was probably the best. I mean, I remember watching him even in Strikeforce thinking, like, wow, this kid's going to be something.
He put it all together.
And then he kind of faltered or went away. I don't know what happened, but my Lord, he looked as good as I've ever seen him. And if he keeps doing things like that, watch out, because he will shoot to the top.
I know he mentioned in the back, and I saw some of the tweets and things, but I haven't had a chance to see it yet, that he's going to see what's next. His contract's up. He wants to see. You were there. Did he sound bitter? Like he's
no,
like
not at
UFC,
all.
Or
not was it, at no? all. I mean, he, from what I remember, definitely is excited about the prospects of what free agency is, and he'll look around and see. But no, in my heart of hearts, I think he wants to stay where he's at. But I wouldn't hate if he did go somewhere. I mean, you got to understand, with a performance like that, he's going to make himself be wanted. And I would hope that the UFC will recognize that we want to keep that kind of caliber dude.
You can't let
within
a guy
their
walk
stable.
Away
no, that'd be
like
they'd,
that.
That'd be stupid.
Good Lord, he looks
stupid.
Amazing.
So,
all right. Well, UFC 202 was in the books. It was a hell of a lot of fun. It lived up to all of our expectations and more. To me, I mean, if I was stranded on a desert island and I was stuck watching a loop of either UFC 200 or UFC 202 over and over again, I'm taking 202 all day, man. This was a lot of fun. And it kicked off a long stretch. I think we've got like 10 event weeks in a row or something like that. 20 of 20, the next 22 weeks or something insane like that.
It's crazy.
It's bizarre, but it's fun. So we're going to pack things up. We're going to get this thing edited, put out. We'll be in Vancouver next week. Myself and Cold Coffee will be there. Doesn't sound like much other media is traveling there, from what I understand. The young Mike Bond will be there as well. That's actually his home country as well, so he'll show us around Vancouver. So we will pick things back up in Vancouver. In the meantime, thanks for listening.